Welcome back to Cargumentative, a Times Live media podcast where we talk about all things cars and motoring. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times, as usual. I'm joined by
Sean Corson, producer of Ignition GT.
And Dennis Dropper, motoring editor of Business Day.
Guys, thanks for joining me. It's a pleasure to have you in studio.
As always.
Thank you.
And as always, we're kicking it off with some news. And I don't know if you guys just saw new Golf GTI.
You stole my news story.
That's why I got in there very quickly.
It's certainly been quite a teaser campaign because just last week they issued like a teaser photo of the front, and now they're certainly squeezing all the mileage they can out of it. And of course, it's making its official debut in Geneva next week.
Yeah, which will be now because we record a week in advance. Anyway, logistics out the way. What do you guys think of it? I mean, it's evolutionary rather than revolutionary. Yeah, exactly.
It looks like a Golf. I can guarantee it'll feel like a Golf, and that's exactly what the customers want. It's exactly what they want. So you know what? I think they've hit it on the sweet spot. They copied the Megane RS a bit with those checkered. Well, Megane RS has those checkered lights at the bottom, fog lights. Those now fog they've lights. Got those little dots, which I think actually still looks really nice.
I think so too. I think it's a nice subtle. It just lends the car just a little bit of a standout feature, because before Golf GTI is just, I mean, they're very hard to distinguish from normal Golfs.
Maybe because you see them on the road everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, they are hugely popular. But I just hope, so there was big talks, they were talking about this is going to become a more pure GTI, going back to the roots of what GTI is, because the seventh generation to me felt a bit meh. It was hugely capable in terms of everyday. It was a consummate all-rounder. It was impeccably built. It rode very nicely. It had good fuel consumption. And it had a turn of pace. But it was just nothing special, was it? It was...
I guess it just did everything well.
Like a couple of weeks back when we were talking about cars becoming too clinical.
Exactly.
To me, if you're going to say that, that epitomizes too clinical of a car.
But I mean, I felt that since... like the Golf 5 GTI. I don't know about you guys, but ever since then, they've always just been, you know, hugely talented cars. Not very exciting, but just get the job done, you know?
I think it does bring us back to that conversation we had last time about clinical, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're just getting so efficient. They're just so good at what they do.
Mm.
You kind of don't have to really drive them or be any kind of wheelsman or hero to bring the best out of them. They just, you push it and it just does the thing. So does that make it clinical or boring? I don't know.
Does it make it exactly what consumers want?
Yeah.
Probably does, yeah.
Probably
you
does.
You know, a Lotus, let's say, is not clinical.
Mm.
It still requires quite a lot of physical effort to drive the thing, or an Alpha 4C. But is that what most buyers are looking for? You know, or do they want that slick efficiency and they still can drive like a bat out of hell? Mm. It's difficult, you know? It's difficult.
But again, I mean, it's a car that'll do everything well. It's one car for many purposes.
Exactly.
You know, you can take it on holiday. You can take it to a track day. You can do some illegal street racing, you know, with a Revo chipping. And on it goes, you know? But I'm glad to see that they've got a 6-speed manual gearbox.
Won't be coming here.
They've
already confirmed that.
Oh, really?
We'll only get the 7-speed DSG coming to our market. Because that's what our market wants. They don't want the manual.
We won't get the plaid seats either, huh?
Probably not, no.
That's sad.
But I genuinely like Golf GTI. It's got such, especially here in South Africa. I mean, come on. Everyone and anyone aspires to own a Golf GTI. Like, that's where our market lies. And I think it'll do great things, depending on the price, because there's so much new tech that's been jammed, not just GTR, into Golf 8 itself.
Yeah.
So much new tech.
With all that digital...
Exactly.
The digitized dashboard.
Price point is going to be very, very, very important for them. I don't know what they'll be able to bring it in at. So we'll
Do you know
see.
When it's coming here?
It's September. They say... They say probably September. So don't bank on it yet. There could be a few issues.
I was at the Outlook... conference last week, VW, and they were saying fourth quarter of the year, but possibly as late as early next year.
Okay.
So initially they were looking at bringing it in September, but I think there's a few T's they have to cross and I's they have to dot.
A few
first.
Supply constraints, a few other markets get a preference above us. That's how it always is.
So that's it, new Golf GTI. We could talk about it all day, but we can't. What else is happening out there?
Well, what's the most Instagrammed roads have just come out.
Okay.
Somebody did a survey of the top 15 road trips in the world, and South Africa's Route 62 was voted as one of those.
Really?
So right up there, right on top was America's Route 66, of course, because everyone knows that.
Yeah.
But Route 62, the road that basically links Port Elizabeth to Cape Town, it's an inland route which essentially starts, it's officially called the Route 62 from Oudtshoorn up to Ashton through the Klein Karoo. And it's it includes some twisty mountain passes, some gorgeous scenery.
It's a great road.
And some very quaint little towns with some eateries. It's become a bit of a tourist trap, but it's still a great road if you're a wheelsman and you want to have some fun through some mountain passes as well.
It's a very good road. I mean, my family stays down in Montague, which is quite close to Ashton. So you can take the Route 62 from Montague up to Barrydale. And that's a great segment. And there's a pass, and there's like long straights, and little police enforcement. So you can really, you know, get up to some good speeds. Mm. Not that I do, of course, but
no.
That's what other people tell me.
Always within the national speed limit.
Always. So that it's a fantastic piece of road. That I drove it from Oudtshoorn a couple of years ago on my way to holiday and enjoyed every bit of it.
Mm. Yeah, every time I'm down there, if I get a chance, I drive that road because it's great. And
never driven it. Yeah, never driven it.
You must do it. You must do it.
Speaking of that, like within a 2 hours driving distance from Joburg, what are the best roads? Would you guys say are the best like driving roads? 2 hours from Joburg.
Well, 2 hours out of Joburg will get you to about Fourways. So I don't know.
I wouldn't recommend William Nicol Drive as one of the best driving roads.
But Corbin's a bit freer, maybe. Yeah.
There's a couple of roads around Hartebeespoort Dam, which will give you like a little bit of a thrill, one or two twists and turns. But essentially, you have to go to Mpumalanga to start experiencing some real driving road, like that 22 from Hazy View to Sabi.
Oh, manufacturers love that on launches, that route. They do.
Unless you're in like a naturally aspirated Hyundai product, entry level.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just like from our side, from a filming perspective, sometimes we like, where do we go?
Yeah, it's tough up here because there's nowhere to take nice photographs. Yeah. Everything's far away, even out near Hartebeespoort. I remember when I first started this job, I would go out there every weekend and it was empty. And then it just got to a stage where you were sitting in traffic and having to deal with pickup trucks and, like building vehicles. It just became an absolute nightmare.
And the amount of roadblocks that happens out that side.
Roadblocks, potholes.
It's sad because we want to experience these cars, but there's nowhere close that where we can like properly go unless you want to go. Then you have to book a track.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's a bit sad.
We'll have to move to Cape Town or to Swabi.
Exactly.
We'll have a chat with the big bosses now. Okay, guys, that's not happening. I have one other thing.
Yes,
Peugeot Land Trek. The new Bucky.
Yeah, we put that up on the site last week.
That's coming to South Africa. It's not going to sell.
Because it's a Peugeot.
No, because our market is so saturated. Because we have loyalists. It's either Ranger, Hilux, or D-Max.
Yeah.
Think about it.
And because it's a Peugeot. Mm. Because generally, unfortunately, no matter how good they make that product, they don't seem to sell. People are...
It's a brand that just has that stigma, you know. And you're dealing with that kind of thing that it's going to break down. And if it does break down, there'll be no parts.
Correct.
And then I'll have to sit around for 2 months waiting for parts. And then when I want to sell, the depreciation will be massive, awe-inspiring.
But you see, most of those things are perception, because I know Peugeot is working very hard. They got Xavier Gabil. He was the big man at who turned around Renault. So there's...
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
It's just if I look at what Fiat did when they brought the Fullback, and everyone was like, it's the same as a Mitsubishi Triton. But yet they didn't sell.
Jeez, remember that, the Fiat Fullback?
But they didn't sell. You can claim...
For that matter, neither is the Triton.
No, exactly.
And this is a brand that's quite well known to people as kind of a... let's say it's got some workhorse applications as well and leisure, and it's well known in this country, and they're still not managing to sell the Strident. So as you say, it's kind of the big four. It's the Hilux, the Ranger, and the Isuzu, and Amarok, we want to see that in there, because everybody always chooses it. It always wins all the awards, but it's just not selling.
Yeah, so it's good for the brand. They'll get a couple of sales, but like, I can't see it making waves. It won't touch Hilux, Isuzu, or Ranger.
Definitely won't. Yeah.
Definitely won't. Sad. It's sad because I like the Peugeot brand. I really do. I think they make phenomenal cars. I really do. They make fantastic cars. It's a pity.
I like the Citroen brand. But again, it's something you don't really want to dabble with, because
not in our economic times. You don't want to experiment.
No,
consumers don't want to experiment in our economic times. So,
it is a very conservative market.
It is.
They tend to hold on to age-old perceptions.
Guys, that's all we have for news. Unfortunately, it's a short one this week. Take a quick break. We'll be back shortly. Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring. Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, we're going to have a little discussion, because we like to do that in segment two. And Dennis actually brought this up. You want to segue into that?
I will indeed. Whenever I go to Germany and you're driving on the Autobahn, every second car is a station wagon. You get the occasional SUV, but mostly it's station wagons. And to my mind, it's a vehicle that makes a whole lot of sense. And I've always wondered why they've never really taken off in South Africa. You know, the likes of BMW and Mercedes and Audi, they've tried to introduce them here, and they've sold like two, and then they've quietly exited the market. And I've just wondered what it is, because, I mean, they have the space for passengers and for the luggage and the mountain bikes and everything, but everybody wants to sit 1 centimeter higher, and they get an SUV instead. So I just wanted to discuss the issue and just kind of try and get to the bottom of why people don't get station wagons, when for me, it makes a whole lot of sense.
It's because people are morons. That's why. People are idiots, and they should be buying station wagons.
But so all our listeners out there, if you don't have a wagon, Tom, what are they?
Idiots.
Okay, all right, cool.
Well, that settles it, I guess.
Yeah, moving on to the next segment, guys.
I don't know. It's just I suppose it's a big pissing contest, you know. South Africans are people that are brand and status mad. You know, they want to have a bigger car. They want to be higher up in the traffic. And I think they want to fit in at the same time. And the general perception in this country is station wagons aren't cool, and they're like mom's taxis, and they just have that kind of like, that kind of staid, I don't know, they're just that. People have never really embraced them.
They don't have the street cred on SUV.
Exactly. They
have
seem
you
like
seen
a step
an
down.
Audi RS6 Avant?
Oh, my. Yeah.
Yes, it's one of the coolest cars
you
out
want to
there.
Talk about street cred.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, but then if you look at a little Honda Civic station wagon, they sold those, yeah?
Yeah, I loved that car. I thought it was cool. And they had them in touring cars.
But it's not just a South African issue. If you look at the States, they don't sell wagons like hardly ever. I think they've literally just introduced the RS6 Avant into America.
They have. But I mean, like, some Americans are like, we want these cars, but they never bring them.
And they never bring them because it's mostly the American journos, motoring journos, are saying that. But yeah, I think it's very European, isn't it? It's in Europe, like you said, when you're in Germany, like, they're everywhere, but like anywhere else in the world, are they that popular? Are they popular in other countries? I don't think so.
Scandinavia?
Yeah, like...
Indeed.
Yeah.
I like them.
But in that whole European sector, I think it's very popular. Outside of Europe, is it as popular? I don't think so.
I'm just trying to understand the popularity of SUVs and crossovers versus wagons, because essentially an SUV is a station wagon on stilts.
Yeah.
And people, I think, have this perception that an SUV is much more practical, especially for South Africa's potholed roads and gravel roads. But then they go and put low-profile tires on their SUVs, which kind of defeats the whole object.
Yeah,
because it's not the 1 centimeter extra ground clearance that helps you drive over potholes. It's high-profile tires.
And the suspension and everything else that works with it. I mean, like from a practicality point of view, station wagons make sense because SUVs are higher. Therefore, you got a much... Yeah. You got a lot higher to load your stuff on. Station wagons are a little bit lower to the ground. They're
and they handle better.
Exactly.
They do. There's a lot less mass. The center of gravity is lower. It's just a body shape that does perform better. I mean, if you're comparing, say, an RS6 Avant to a similar...
Well, let's like say a Q5 or a Q7.
Exactly. An RS-Q5. Something like that.
I would rather drive the Avant, I have to say, a driving point of view, and it's no less practical. Yeah. I've always thought of that RS6, especially in black, as Batman's family car.
Yeah, exactly like that, you know. But it is. I mean, it's an amazing looking car, and the new one also is just like mind-boggling, and it's quick, and it does everything. Again, it's like a Golf GTI. It kind of does like it's one car for many purposes. Mm.
But when did we start to see the demise of the station wagon here locally? When did the station wagon really because at one stage it was fairly popular, and a couple of manufacturers were bringing in station wagons, and then slowly but surely they all just faded out.
Well, I think it's the SUVs and crossovers
100%.
that are killing everything. Yeah. They're killing sedans.
I blame the RAV4.
Yeah. Actually, that's where it started.
And then everybody's like, no, that's a good idea. Mm. Let's get rid of station wagons and focus on that. But they were popular. I mean, I remember my dad had a Ford Sierra station wagon.
Ooh, nice.
You know? And when that came out, that was like quite a thing, you know? It was like futuristic and a wagon. And it was cool. It was a great car for the purpose that, you know, my dad needed. And then we got an Opel Astra Estate as well.
I remember those.
Yeah. And that was a car that I took to the matric dance. And I was more excited about taking that car to the matric dance than actually the date. You then left me at the after party. But that's another discussion.
We wonder why she left.
We wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. I'm only starting to realize.
Was it the wagon, Tom? It was the wagon. It was the wagon. But yeah, guys, I don't know. To me, I really like them. And Dennis raises some very valid points in terms of why they should be selling. But consumers just don't want them.
What is still available on the local market wagon-wise? I mean, Mercedes, are they still bringing in?
I actually can't think of one right now.
So last Mercedes-Benz launch I was on, I was speaking to the marketing director. Actually, it was quite a while back. So when they launched the facelifted C-Class, I actually asked them, so if a customer wants a wagon, they'll be like, yes, we will bring it in for that specific customer. Are we going to bring it in? No. But if that customer wants it, we'll make a plan to get it to them. But otherwise, they won't. There's literally, when the RS6 Avant finally makes its local debut, I think that will be it, isn't it? An RS4 Avant.
RS4 Avant. Yeah. So it's basically Audi.
It's basically Audi. Mercedes, BMW, they don't sell. VW don't sell. And because I think now it's become more premium. Although, do you think a station wagon would work better as a budget? As a budget car, instead of now we're seeing a Renault Trabant with 7 seats, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think a station wagon would rather work better as a budget?
I'm just saying that whichever price segment you're in, it just makes practical sense. That you've got the space and the cargo capacity, but you don't have the worse handling because it sits high off the ground.
Yeah.
It still handles like a normal car.
I mean, I'd rather have the wagon version of the sedan, like a Passat. I think the Passat's a great car. Yeah. If that came in a wagon, I'd kill for one here. I mean, that's just like a really nice, you know, and it looks better as well. It just stands up.
They're making some really stylish wagons. I mean, that Mercedes A45 shooting brake that they sell overseas. That's their word for a wagon. I mean, that's a really cool looking vehicle.
Like that old one, was it the CLS? The CLS 63?
CLS 63.
The shooting brake?
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly it's a shooting brake.
It was a shooting brake, and it had like a wooden decking inlay.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
In the cargo space.
Like the name escapes me.
Like an old yacht. It was, oh man, that thing was cool. Huh?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish consumers would, because then that means we just get to test more wagons.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, our market
Yeah, South African consumers, guys. You suck.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Jeez, you're telling our listeners they're morons, and now you're telling them they
suck. I'm grumpy today.
Yeah, I can see.
I'm grumpy.
Take a sip, Tom.
I'm grumpy.
But yeah, no, I'd love to see wagons, guys, genuinely. And like, I think all motoring journos, we all like ogle over wagons. When you see a wagon, we're like, oh my God, look how amazing this thing is.
I found the same thing, yeah. But we can't seem to light a fire under the public.
And you used to see them in racing as well. You don't see SUVs on the racetrack. No. Remember, like, you got the Volvo 850 in British touring cars.
That was cool.
A little bit before your time, but I'm glad you remember
it. I remember it. No.
Do you remember it? Okay.
Ricard Rydell used to.
Ricard Rydell, and you had like a, it was a like a fluffy toy dog in the window, a sheepdog actually, as a joke, you know, because everybody said you're going to go and collect the dogs and stuff. So he's like, well, okay, I'll put one in the car.
That's a great memory, Tom.
Good memory, huh?
Actually, I saw an RS2 Avant. Do you guys remember
that? Yeah, yeah.
Do you guys remember that? I saw that the other day.
That was like heavily engineered with Porsche. Porsche brakes, Porsche wheels.
It's the first time I went 260 on the German Autobahn was in an RS2 Avant.
Wow. What color was it?
It was blue, of course.
Oh. Ah, of course it had to be in blue. On that, what's the fastest you've ever driven on the Autobahn?
Just over 300.
In which car?
That would have been an Audi R8.
Oh, nice. Yeah. How did it handle at that speed?
There was no handling involved. It was just like, straight line.
And it was just...
Oh, no, stable. Yeah, rock solid. Rock solid.
Interesting.
And you? How fast have you been on the German Autobahn?
If I went to the German Autobahn, that would be a good start. I won't tell you on our national highways. Because last guy got cuffed because he posted on social media that...
Yeah,
it was doers.
Very, very silly.
Yeah.
So that's it. Wagons. If you don't like them, you suck. And if you bought them, then we could all enjoy them.
If you don't like them, tell us why.
Yeah.
Tell us why.
Write to us.
Write to us or get social.
Mm. We want to know.
Hashtag why do you hate wagons?
Because we're sitting here thinking, guys, why? And like, at the end of the day, the consumers need to tell us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They need to say. So write to us. Write to us.
Write to us. Hashtag us. At us. Hashtag cogumentative. On whatever platform you like to use, and we'll pick it up. All right, that brings us to the end of the wagon debate. Anything you want to add? Final notes? Nope.
Said it all.
Cool. We'll have a break, and we'll be back shortly. To advertise on the Cogumentative podcast, simply email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Welcome back to Cogumentative. Guys, we're going to chat about the cars we've been driving and the launches we've been on. But before we do that, Dennis wanted to say something in the news segment. And then I rudely cut him off because Paige rudely cut me off.
Mm. It's always producer Paige's fault, isn't it?
Always.
I thought it was just important to mention that Formula One fans have some good news in that they can live stream Formula One races as from this season for the first time. It's the official Formula One TV live streaming service. And for $4.99 a month, which at this moment is 76 Rand a month, you can have access to live streaming of Formula One, so you don't have to buy a whole DStv premium subscription to be able to do this. And and it's quite a package because it gives you all the telemetry, all the timing. You can have on-demand view into the driver's cockpits. So it's quite a package, you know, for the real F1 fan. So you don't have to go watch it in pubs anymore if you don't want to. And it's all on demand, and you can have historical F1 archive footage as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'd quite like that. I like archives. Mm. If you don't want to subscribe, can you get one-time access at all? So, like, say you've got DStv, but it goes down, and you want to watch the Formula One race, can you just go on and say, right, for a certain amount, I can just get one-time access?
I think you can subscribe either, you can take an annual package or a month-by-month package.
Okay. All right.
I think it's fantastic. It's going to shake up the industry because Supersport has held that monopoly for years. Now you're giving consumers another option. I think it's fantastic.
It's what they needed because MotoGP's had it for a while. And before I managed to steal somebody's DSTV login details and access their...
DSTV Now.
I used to do that. But so that's quite a thing. Cars, guys, what have you been driving?
Oh, I have. So I've been spending the time behind the wheel of the new Audi A7.
I saw you fell in love with that car. Oh. Every single Instagram post was just emoticons and hearts.
I loved that car, guys. To me, it's impeccable. Like, they've nailed it. To me, I drove the CLS, and if you compare the CLS to the A7, if my personal opinion, I prefer that A7. I do. It is just so impeccably built. It rides. They've missed a trick though. Is that they've only brought out the 55 TFSI, which is the 3-liter V6. They should have brought a diesel in.
But Dieselgate, and it's like now the devil's fuel.
I know,
and
but like I think our consumers. I mean, personally for me, I'd probably, if I was buying an A7, just standard A7, I'd probably want a diesel in it.
I would too. Yeah.
Regardless, it is just it's fantastic. It rides beautifully. It's beautifully made. It looks the part. It's difficult to fault. It genuinely is very difficult to fault. I think Audi at the moment are just doing things right. They really are. They're getting it right.
I haven't driven it yet, but I really enjoyed the previous generation. So I can imagine. The RS7 was also particularly exciting.
That was a cool car. I like that. And also they had the bi-turbo TDI, which made the same amount of torque, I think, as the RS7. That thing was a proper sleeper. Not as much power, but you had that torque. Lovely car.
So anyway, interestingly on this car, so that car, price as tested for the A755 TFSI is 1.25 bar. Our price as tested was 1.576 million. Cool. So there is 326,000 rand worth of options.
But where does it come from? Like, what are we actually paying? I mean, is there anything that kind of stands out that...
What our unit was fitted with, I think from reading previous journalists who have driven the A7, they've said adaptive air suspension is definitely a box that needs to be ticked. From there, I've only experienced it with adaptive air suspension. It's not bad, 34,000 rand.
Yeah, it's not bad. In the past, that used to be like
But then if you go scroll through, like Audi Sport Cast alloy wheels, 21,000 rand. The S Sport seats are 28,000 rand. The Night Vision Assist is 37,000 rand. Head-up display is 24,000.
I hate those things.
City Assistant package is 22,000. Like, you do see how...
Does it come with navigation as standard?
I think I'm not sure. I'll have
There was a time when that was a very expensive option in Audis.
I mean, you pay 2,000 rand for an increased volume in your fuel tank. Like, the option list is extensive. But so if you are a consumer who has 1.2 million rand to spec wisely. But there's some features like the night vision assist. I'm sorry, that's a waste of money.
Yeah, it's a cool novelty. Yeah,
it's a waste
of money. You can see people at night.
But guys, if you get your hand on the wheel, I promise you, like, they've got it spot on. They really have. That's nailed. Like, much nicer than the CLS. Built better. As well.
I'm sure. I mean, Audi makes the best interiors.
They've got really great interiors.
They really do. Their build quality is impeccable.
Yeah.
Like, you can't touch them in terms of build quality. But yeah, that's what I've been driving. Now driving a A200 at the moment.
A200 sedan. Okay.
Engine's quite gruff. As a package, I guess it does the job.
That's not a bad car. I drove one. When did I drive one? Last year or the year before? Not bad. It's a lot better than the previous one. Yeah.
I enjoy them, but I find the throttle action a little bit too spirited. I know that sounds crazy from a motoring journalist, but it's just that with the turbo charging,
a jerky drive.
It's difficult to drive it smoothly around town.
Yeah, I found that as well. It's just a little bit, and then the engine just holds on to revs a little bit too long, and you're like, change, and now you're just hearing this rough three-cylinder noise, and you're like, change. Yeah, some cheap interior plastics, though, unfortunately. Especially those stalks. Like, they feel like they're going to break off. Dedicated stalks. But other than that, I think it looks good.
I do like that digital dashboard.
Yeah.
It looks very Star Trek.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's quite easy to use. It's quite intimidating when you first get into that car, because it's just like screens.
And you've once you get buttons, used to it,
it's actually very intuitive.
The scrolling, the touch sensitive scrollers on the steering wheel, it works.
It's a good system.
Phenomenally, it really does.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And those turbine-style air vents.
Yeah, so I see Merck is actually moving away from that. Like, if you looked at the GLE, if you looked at the GLE interiors, they've gotten rid of that. All the CLS, the GT, they've gotten rid of those turbine air vents. They actually
I like the color.
I think
I also like them. They were cool.
Yeah, I like the color. To me, it adds exuberance to the interior. Now it's a little bit more toned down.
I just like. I wish they would shroud that LCD display, because there's always that gap behind it, and in five years' time. The amount of lint and dead skin cells and God knows what else that's going to like stack up behind there, like disgusting.
That'll be the problem of the person who buys it from you.
Yeah,
right? Who buys
that's
it second
hand?
Scraping out somebody else's DNA from
tasty.
Behind the
lovely
LCD.
Appetizing
Dennis, what have you been driving?
I've been driving the Renault Megane RS280 Cup.
What color is it?
It's red.
Okay.
So this is Renault's answer to Golf GTI, Honda i30N, Honda Civic Type R. And yeah, I've been enjoying it. It's a very perky car. It's not the most powerful in its league, but it's more than powerful enough to qualify as a boy racer.
How much is it?
It's a good question. I haven't actually checked the price. It's usually the last thing I check before I write the road test.
Me too, yeah.
Probably around $600, I can imagine.
Chat amongst yourselves and I'll check, because it's a good thing to know.
Very similar in philosophy to some of the other hatches out there, particularly the Hyundai i30N that I recently drove. So it's also front-wheel driven, 6-speed manual gearbox, and it's also got the various driving modes from economy up to dynamic and race, which changes everything. Mild to wild modes. And yeah, I've been enjoying it. I think it's a proper boy racer's car.
Is it firm?
It's got the looks. It is firm, but I know it's 20% stiffer than the Megane Lux version.
Yeah.
But it's not as teeth jarring or teeth shattering as I expected. As long as you keep it on relatively smooth tar, don't go try driving it on gravel with those low profile tires. But it's okay.
It starts from $589,900
for the Lux.
For the 280 Cup.
Oh, for the two, that's not bad at all.
Yeah, so
that's
I think the two cars cost the same. The Lux and the Cup.
It's exactly the same. Which is pretty good in a world of Hyundai i30Ns. Golf GTIs, Civic Type Rs, so it's actually pretty affordable, and it obviously comes with all the tech. I had one quite a while ago, so I can't remember, but I think it comes with mood lighting and all those kind of.
Correct, it does, yeah, and it's got that limited slip diff, and it's got the 4-wheel steering, which is controversial. Not everybody likes it.
It's very controversial. I for one don't like the way it feels in a front wheel drive hot hatch. I like. Because I'm old school and grumpy, I like my hot hatches to not have rear wheel steer. You know, I want to feel like those wheels, well, those tires scraping for traction when I come off the throttle around a roundabout. I don't want the car to help me turn. I want it to like step out.
I have to disagree with you there, because I just don't want a car to understeer. And this 4-wheel steering reduces that understeer. However they come about this, then I'm all for it, you know. If you want to call it a fake way of doing it or not, it's
I don't mind it at all. Don't mind it at all. To me, it just made the car feel a little bit more agile, a little bit nimble. I mean, you're turning, you have to adjust. I found like I turned in, the car's doing a bit too much there. Like,
oversteers.
I does do that, but you
much.
Get used to it. You get used to it. To me, I think it's great. I've only driven the Megane RS in Lux with the EDC, which everyone doesn't seem to enjoy so much. I don't mind it, actually. I'm a big fan. I like the Renault Megane RS. I'm a Renault fan. Like, I just really like that car. So I'm keen to actually get a chance with it.
Anything that reduces understeer is okay in my book. Yeah.
And the gearbox? Manual gearbox?
No, it's good. It's good. I mean, I don't find it a chore to drive it around town. It's slick and the clutch is light. So I like that. The purists will like it, because everything's two pedals nowadays.
It's interesting. I mean, I drove that back to back with the Clio Sport,
That RS18F1.
Yeah, that one with the long
Kaiser
name.
Chiefs livery.
Kaiser Chiefs livery. And I actually thought the Clio was much better. I thought that Clio, it was a fun car. I got into it. I wanted to drive it fast. I wanted to put it into sport mode. Whereas the Megane RS, it was like...
Did you drive the Lux version?
I did drive the Lux version.
Yeah, maybe give it a shot with
I'll give it a whirl.
With the cup and see how it's like.
I will.
What have you been driving, Tom?
Something a lot slower. Doesn't even have 100 kilowatts.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The Hyundai Venue.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, which is actually...
Is that that red one that's parked downstairs?
Correct, yeah. Huh. It's a pleasant little vehicle, that. You know? In a world of T-crosses, it makes a good case for itself. Mm. I mean, I had the Fluid model. I don't know why they called it Fluid. It's just not a nice name.
Well, Honda and naming, they don't work well, do they?
Doesn't bring up good connotations, but anyway.
Some of their names actually are swear words or genitals in other languages.
Yeah,
so
they're very good at that.
Yeah, they're very good at that.
I think they have like a marketing guy that just thinks of these names for a laugh.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Yeah. I'm telling you.
But pretty good. I mean, 309,000 rand, and it's a lot cheaper than a T-Cross Comfort Line by over 30,000. It's got all the things you want: automatic AC, Apple CarPlay. I like that engine, that little 1 liter turbo. The three cylinder. It sounds nice. I like three cylinder engines.
Is that the same engine as the Kona?
Exactly the same engine as the Kona.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I like those three-cylinder engines in terms of their character.
They sound like real engines. They don't need to rely on transposers and, you know, fake engine noise and piped-in sounds. It sounds like a real engine.
Mm. I actually haven't driven the new Venue. I'm waiting for my unit to come through. But from what I've read, from what I've seen, from the way it looks like it's going to be a big seller.
I like the styling. They've done something a bit different. It doesn't just blend into the scenery.
Yeah, exactly. And it's nice to drive. Like, it feels tight. It feels rigid. It rides well. It handles well for what the car is. It's spacious.
And above all that, you get that fantastic Hyundai warranty and service plan.
You do. I mean, I was expecting... I mean, because I drove the T-Cross at the end of last year, and I was like, sure, this is going to be a hard car to compete with. But I think the Venue does a great job, and it's cheaper. So, you know, if you're looking for something...
I actually haven't seen many of them on the road. What I have seen on the road is the Seltos's. I've seen
Seltos's
tons
nice.
Of them on the road.
Yeah, there's so much action in that market segment at the moment.
Mm. And the lines have been blurred. I think we were discussing this in GT a couple of weeks ago, but the lines have been blurred because Seltos doesn't compete against Venue or T-Cross.
No.
Seltos is a little bit bigger. I think it's more Qashqai, Creta kind of competitor, rather.
Yeah, there's so much crossover, excuse the pun, this crossover segment right now, because they're all these different lengths, so it's difficult to say what competes against what. You know?
Exactly, and then it takes us back, you know. If people just bought wagons, people wouldn't have to have crossover version of a crossover.
Can you imagine bringing out a little 4-meter station wagon?
Yeah,
you
know? A coupe station wagon. Yeah. Like the Volvo Amazon station wagon. That was cool. 3-door wagon.
Well, like a Zagato kind of.
Yeah. Or an 86 wagon, shooting brake. Remember they had that concept. That
you
had an 86 shooting brake.
Yeah.
I would have signed a line.
It
so
really
cool.
Did. It looked really
so cool. Very cool. Yeah, guys, thanks again for joining me.
Pleasure,
I've got to call
always.
It.
Thank you, Thomas.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week for another episode of Cargumentative. Ciao for now.